Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So the report is in, and today all 100 United States senators will have secure access to the FBI additional background report on Brett Kavanaugh, per the Jeff Flake, Chris Coons compromise from last week.
Start the clock. They could have a vote as soon as Saturday.
Perhaps as soon as tomorrow. No staff access to the report. 10 Judiciary Committee staffers will have access to the file, just the Judiciary Committee staffers.
Yeah.
Paper report, no PDFs or emails. It will not be made public.
Yeah, but the White House, President Trump read it a few hours ago and already leaked to, I think, one of the Washington papers, that there's no evidence of sexual misconduct on behalf of Brett Kavanaugh.
Wall Street Journal reporting, yes, the White House finding no corroboration of the allegations of sexual misconduct after examining interview reports from the FBI's latest probe, according to people familiar with the matter. You know those people. They're always familiar with the matter. So as sort of anticipated, nothing's changed except the Democrats' arguments. It's no longer about sexual assault. It's not even really any longer about drinking. It's about temperament and credibility.
Right.
I mean, listen to no less than Senator T-Bone Booker from New Jersey.
So my hope is that just beyond the vicious partisan rancor that is going on, beyond the accusations, we don't lose sight of what this moral moment is about in this country.
Moral moment.
And ultimately ask ourselves the question, is this the right person to sit on the highest court in the land for a lifetime appointment when their credibility has been challenged by intimates, people that knew the candidate well as a classmate? When his temperament has been revealed in an emotional moment where he used language that frankly shocked a lot of us. And then ultimately, not whether he's innocent or guilty, this is not a trial, but ultimately, has enough questions be raised that we should not move on to another candidate. And that long list put together by the Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society, move on to another candidate, because ultimately, the Supreme Court is not an entitlement. Just because you went to Yale or were president of your class doesn't entitle you to the Supreme Court. This is a sacred institution. And the people that should be on it, whether you disagree with their political or judicial philosophy at all, the people who should be on the Supreme Court should preserve the integrity of the court and be beyond the reproach of these difficult partisan
times. I mean, the moral voice of a nation, T-Bone Booker. So powerful.
I'm so moved.
So breathless, his presentation. So that's the argument that the Democrats are now making. It's a temperament, 12 years on the appellate court. It's a temperament and now credibility issue. Don't pay any attention to the underlying disagreement over cryptic inscriptions in the yearbook or drinking as an undergrad. Don't pay any attention to what the credibility issue surrounds. It's just a credibility and temperament issue. It's very interesting to watch the devolution of the Democrats.
Well, and I thought yesterday they just focused a lot on President Trump's comment that he made about Christine Ford. Here's Murkowski.
I don't approve of the comments from last night. I thought that they were wrong and extraordinarily unfortunate.
Yeah.
So her Collins and Flake were all very upset. And
everybody's upset.
Right. But what's going to happen with that?
Well, so now this is the other prong of the argument Democrats have. Trump's mean.
Yeah, he's been mean.
Want to make it.
He's, We've known that. He's just a little goofy.
Want to make it, this is Trump now. You can't talk about Kavanaugh without talking about Trump. So Kavanaugh is a proxy for Trump. Kamala Harris, yesterday at the Atlantic Ideas Conference.
What would you have said to President Trump about his mocking of that very memory at his campaign rally last night in Mississippi?
Stop being mean.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes, yes. Thank you. Somebody said it. The somebody who says Brett Kavanaugh is a rapist. Democrats chastising Trump about mockery. Mockery in terms of the credibility of statements made pales in comparison to what we've witnessed Brett Kavanaugh and his family subjected to, doesn't it?
He fought back because he was being wrongly accused, and the FBI report that's out today is going to prove that he was wrongly accused.
Well,
you're just going to take punches. You got to defend yourself, and you have to protect your family.
It doesn't prove anything, including the allegations against him, and that's the problem. And so you're left with Trump is mean. I mean, are you kidding? Look, we talked about Trump's comments at that Mississippi rally yesterday. Unnecessary, not helpful. Yeah. Didn't like him either. But Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or anybody else on the Dem side, they have standing to talk about not being nice in this environment? Are you serious? Are you serious? And if it could get any less serious, we hear from Senator Missing in Action Blumenthal. Got all the stars were out yesterday. Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Dick Blumenthal, all commenting.
And I believe that by virtue of lack of
temperament
and fitness for office, as was demonstrated so graphically in that last, when he threatened and came to us full of revenge and arrogance and acrimony, that this man should not be on the Supreme Court. So I would continue to urge my colleagues to vote against him. And we need to educate the American people about the reasons for those decisions so that, in fact, they will be on the side of my colleagues. They will support them for that decision.
What Blumenthal is referencing there at the end is we need to educate the American people so we don't lose Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin and Joe Donnelly and other red state Dem senators on this vote.
That's still on the fence our three Republicans.
Yeah, that's what Blumenthal's suggesting.
You know, someone was on CNN about 3 o'clock this morning, and they made a really good point.
That sounds
unlikely. It was a Republican view for the first time in, I think, 5 years in the morning show that I've seen. He said he's a great umpire. He's proven that. But when the umpire gets beat up in the parking lot after the game and is wrongly accused, he has to defend himself, and that's what he did.
Well, exactly.
And I thought that was a great analogy.
I mean, the whole temperament issue, and he had a sharp word for this senator and that senator, and he got a little frustrated with Sheldon Whitehouse.
Yeah, what do you drink? What do you drink?
That's my favorite. Going through every acronym in his yearbook. That has nothing to do with adjudicating cases. And ultimately, Blumenthal and others, conceded what this is about. And they don't like him. They don't like a conservative on the court. They don't want the balance of power shifted so dramatically. They want a squish like Anthony Kennedy, or no one at all. Put this off, obviously, the delay tactic until after the midterms, with the hope that this will somehow buoy them to the majority. It won't. That's the good news. The good news is what we're seeing happening is participation and enthusiasm among Republicans and on-again, off-again midterm voters is increasing. So the deficit between Democrats and Republicans on that score is decreasing, and that means a lot of races are tightening up or seats that lean Republican are leaning Republican again. So that enthusiasm matters. That participation matters. And Kavanaugh, one of the, I think, unintended, unforeseen consequences of what the Democrats have done is their base, the resistance, couldn't be more fired up. Republican base, a little less enthusiastic, that matters in a midterm, and that gap is closing because Kavanaugh and because of the unfair way and really unseemly way in which they've treated him. Chris in Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dan, I'm sure you played poker from time to time in your life, yes?
I do partake in games of chance from time to time.
Yeah, he's pretty good at it, too.
Well, that's good. So, Dan, let me ask you a question. Have you ever bluffed? Have you ever bluffed during a poker hand ever that you can remember?
Yes, but you would never know my tell.
Okay, well, this is where the Democrats are right now. They have bluffed here. And now when you bluff and you go all the way to the end where you got to lay your pathetic cards on the table and show that you got nothing, that's where we are. They have nothing. And we went all the way to the end of this poker hand, and now the embarrassment is going to settle in for them. That's how I see this as being the conclusion of this.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy. Thanks for the call, Chris. Chuck and Delavan.
Hey, I'm not trying to be funny. I normally try to be funny. I'm pretty upset that they did an investigation without her, where she could have been brought up on federal charges for lying. The next thing is they spent the money, my tax dollar, for an FBI investigation that I don't have access through the Freedom of Information Act. And the last thing is that guy's temperament, and the way I look at it is, you want to burn my house down? Now I'm going to burn your house down. And that's why how he came out swinging. And I'm telling you right, up here in the bars around Wisconsin, even the Democrats are going to be voting Republican this time around. Thank you very much.
Well, it's good to hear. Thanks for the call, Chuck, because Scott Walker and Leah Vukmir need them.
Yeah. The people that they did interview, Mark Judge, P.J. Smith, Leland Kaiser, Deborah Ramirez, and four others. I don't think they interviewed Brett Kavanaugh, and they did not interview Christine Ford.
No,
they just
neither one.
Yeah, it was a background check, not a criminal investigation.
Yeah, right.
So
exactly.
When you do a background check, I don't know if any of your friends have ever worked for the federal government. They'll call you up or call you in, and it's a long, lengthy process.
Yeah. Talk to your friends.
Yeah.
See if... see what Squee has to say about
you. How, whatever happened to Squee?
Tim in Woodstock.
Hi, good morning, Dan and Amy. You know, it's interesting to watch their process here. They're trying to portray a man as being mean and having the wrong kind of temperament to fulfill this job and tie him to another man, the president, who's mean, when the entire tenor of what the Democrats are doing in this hearing is mean. It's a political hit job. That's what's on display here, Senator Blumenthal. You know, it's not the meanness of one man. It's the political hit job that you guys are doing on this man. And when he responds with some righteous anger, you try to turn it into some false idea that he's, you know, unfit for the job.
Thanks for the call, Tim. That's a good summary. Robert in Oak Brook.
G'day, mates. Friends of mine who live in Australia called me up and told me that the gentleman who said he was a Vietnam veteran but wasn't, he just said on your airwaves that he has to educate the American people about his ways. So don't be on the truthful side. Don't be on the right. Don't be a Republican or independent and defend it. We have to educate you on how stupid we want you to be and how we want you to follow in our footsteps.
Yes, educate in the Orwellian sense of the word. Thanks, Robert.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So closing arguments today in the Jason Van Dyke trial goes to the jury today. You could have a verdict ostensibly before the week is out, but more likely next week.
Yeah, that's the problem. So it goes to the jury. Deliberations they think are going to begin this afternoon. And do we want a verdict to be rendered on a Friday? Or do you think there'll be less violence if it's on a Monday? I know that sounds crazy, but I'm worried. And the reason why I'm worried is because on the way to work today, I stopped by, you know, to see Carlos there at the Dunkin' Donuts, and they're deciding whether or not they're going to remain open once the verdict is rendered, because they're hearing rumblings that people are going to come from all over, and they're going to go target Wrigleyville and establishments on the way to Wrigleyville off of the expressway.
Well, there's more than that they're targeting. We'll get to that in a moment, but you had competing impressions of the trial. And the case the state did or did not make out yesterday after the defense rested and one rebuttal witness was called. Here's our friend Dean Angelo, the former head of Chicago's FOP, FOP Lodge 7, and a family friend of the Van Dykes, offering his assessment to ABC 7.
I believe if the emotion of the video is removed from the jury's mindset, then that the law is followed. You know, I don't think that the state has proven their case at this stage.
And interestingly, the response from our friend Greg Livingston, he's the minister who's organized some of the shutdown marches, Lakeshore Drive and the Kennedy.
Yeah.
Coalition for a New Chicago is his organization. He, in his remarks to the press after yesterday's proceedings, he didn't really offer an assessment of the case. He did what a lot of people are doing, particularly those that wanted to see Van Dyke convicted, if not executed, and I'll get to that in a second. He just talked about kind of our justice system and black and white Chicago and rich and poor Chicago. You know, again, it's a lot of things that they want to put on trial in addition to Van Dyke.
In 6 seconds to jump out and to begin shooting the young man, to have a volley of two shots and drop him, and then to shoot him with 14 more shots, none of that makes sense to me, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that it does. Before we talk about suppressing riots, let's talk about enabling justice in this case, which is on video, which everyone is seeing around the world, and we're just hoping that the right thing will be done.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, I just got a text message, too, from one of my police officer friends. The marathon is Sunday, the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah,
the Columbus
right.
Day Parade is Monday. So they won't be deliberating Monday if they don't reach a verdict by this weekend. But what if they do reach a verdict by tomorrow and it doesn't go in, you know, the way that protesters want it to go?
Well, let me put the question to our listeners that Maze Jackson put to his. Maze Jackson is our colleague. He's morning show host at WVON. Talked the other day about kind of recounted this panel discussion I was on with him and Eric Zorn on Flannery's program on Fox Chicago last Sunday on this case. Maze Jackson posted on Facebook, should Jason Van Dyke receive the death penalty? Now, of course, here's a bit of an update for Maze.
Does he know that there's a moratorium on the death penalty?
Well, there is no death penalty.
Actually, right,
more
exactly.
than a moratorium, there's no death penalty. It's
in
been
Illinois.
Rescinded. But just setting that aside, so life in prison. So Jason Van Dyke, if convicted, will get the death penalty if Illinois had it. Life in prison since we have that. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. But it gives you an insight into the anger and the feelings of, not having access to a justice system that's fair. Signs posted around the city on light poles. You may have seen. I've seen them. Friends have sent me some other things.
Yeah, you talked about it yesterday.
Yeah, here's a new one.
Can I see it? What is it?
The murder trial of Jason Van Dyke, the pig who murdered Laquan McDonald, with 16 shots. It's nearing its final days. When the jury announces a verdict, let's gather and burn down Jason Van Dyke's house. Gather at 6043 North Kedvale and let's roast that pig. So there's no confusion. This is his house and it's pictured. And then they've got a cartoon of let's burn that pig and a cartoon of a pig in a police uniform.
Oh, can I see that? Oh, my gosh.
Burn down Jason Van Dyke's house.
He wears a bulletproof vest to court every day, to and from court, and so does his father, because their family's under constant attack, or threat, I should say. And then Father Flager said that when the verdict is rendered or released, everyone's going to boycott. No one's going to go to school. No one's going to go to work. And they're going to shut down the expressway.
Yeah. Other missives are being sent out by community organizations. A friend of mine has got a business in the West Loop. Got this from the executive director of the West Loop Community Organization.
Yeah.
In the event you believe your business and or home are located along routes used for public assembly. Yeah. Okay. Is that what we're worried about? Public assembly? In efforts to allow for safe passage, please consider temporarily relocating any items and or vehicles within or near the public way. And it goes on to cite, you know, articles of the Constitution about Illinois Constitution about redress of grievances. It's so silly.
So basically, sanitized. Are they telling people to move their worldly possessions and board up your windows?
Yeah. And
I have a friend in the South Loop who's going to do what they did when they had NATO here and board up her windows.
In a very sanitized way, they're saying, hey, the riots, there could be riots and they could be coming your way, so you may want to take evasive action. Yeah, that's basically what they're saying.
Okay, I'm worried. Are you concerned?
Yeah,
I wasn't worried until Dunkin' Donuts this morning. Now I'm worried.
Because the Dunkin' Donuts is going to close?
Well, because he seemed genuinely scared and has to make a decision whether or not to keep it open or close it on the information that he received. And that's that they're going to burn down buildings. They're going to break windows along their route from the expressway to Wrigleyville.
Yeah.
Why would they choose Wrigleyville?
I mean, I think people aren't paying attention to this case because of Kavanaugh and other things. The Bears are playing now.
Bears.
Hawks and Bulls and so forth. And so people, you know, it's not consuming everybody's lives the way that, say, the Kavanaugh story has. Don't be so sure. Maybe not the lives of many people in certain neighborhoods. But, again, I go back to my friend Mays Jackson at VON. And what you see, some of these signs that you see posted around South and West Side neighborhoods, for example. There's more intensity the intensity differs by the community in terms of paying attention to this and importance that is placed on this verdict. So don't be so sure because, for example, you know, you're not watching every waking moment of the case the state put on, the defense that Van Dyke's team put on, that other people are not, and they're not going to be very angry if the verdict doesn't come back the way they want it. So I would say, I mean, I don't.
Should we get a hotel room out here?
I'm not in the business of inciting hysteria. That's the Chicago media's job. But I would say, generally in the city these days, when you have the civilian authorities surrender to the thugs, which is what the political authorities have done in this city and state, they've surrendered. We're going to contain it. That's
surrender. What is contained?
That's surrendering to predators. That's what they've done. So I would say when you have that dynamic and then you add this possibility into it, I would keep my head on a swivel if I'm in the city. But I would say that all the time.
It makes me want to move out temporarily. Get Peyton and Eli out of there.
I can understand that. Vince in St. Charles, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, guys. No death penalty, absolutely not. No life in prison. There's so many reasons why the city never handles anything properly. They can't they just, like, the cop, I didn't listen to the trial, but I'm sure he just made a bad mistake. But a death penalty, he's a cop under pressure in the city of Chicago, a lot of things going on. They're not handling this right. Burn down his house? Come on. There's so many reasons why I don't like the city, and this continues to grow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vince. Mike in Bolingbrook.
Yeah, I've been listening to all you guys, and you hit it spot on. The politicians and the authorities in the city are surrendering to the thugs. And I believe no matter what the verdict, you're going to have some sort of mayhem and probably some fires or cop cars destroyed or whatever. And I really didn't follow the trial that much, but I did see on the video this kid, no matter what color he is and no matter what color the cop is, was shot once 15 feet away with cop cars all over the place. There was no reason to continue to shoot that kid. So I believe Van Dyke is guilty. I don't know about murder, but he's guilty of not doing what he should have done as a police officer.
All right. Thanks for that.
I completely disagree from the testimony that I saw, he had no choice. His back was up against the wall. And he did, well, he had, it, Jason Van Dyke, or Laquan McDonald had plenty of time to drop his weapon and get on his knees and put his hands behind his head. But he was defiant. He was agitated. He was high on PCP. He wasn't listening. And he already slashed tires on a police car and hit the windshield of a police car. He had no respect. Nobody knew what he was. Unpredictable. He's a ticking time bomb. Man, he's not a kid. The media wants you to think he's a kid because they show that stupid picture of his eighth grade graduation with his missing tooth. He was a grown man, 17 years old, developed, not a kid, and a high school dropout. Well, that's what the graduation picture is from eighth grade because he didn't graduate from high school.
Joe in Hoffman Estates.
Yeah, Father Flager at it again, as usual. As far as boycotting goes, out of the 5,000 people, probably only about 6 go to school or have a job. And the police could use less than lethal force pretty easily when the crowds gather, and that would be by shooting applications into the crowd, and they would run.
Thanks for the call, Joe. We're going to get the old Richard J. Daley shoot to maim order. Brian in Waukegan.
Hi, good morning. I couldn't agree with Amy more that I've been saying for months, if these people would just comply, do you know how many people would still be alive? But that is, my question is, can they find Van Dyke guilty of a lesser crime? And didn't that just occur within the last few months where there was a case where they went for first-degree murder and they acquitted him on that and there was no other option?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. It's a great point you raised, Brian, a great question you asked. So I think it was something like a 23-count indictment against Van Dyke. So you've got the first-degree premeditated murder charge. You also have 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm, one count of official misconduct that Van Dyke is charged with in this case. And so, yes, there are lesser-included offenses on which they could convict if they don't convict on premeditated murder. But the question then becomes, well, will that satisfy? I mean, if you don't get convicted of murder or manslaughter, then will that satisfy people who want to see Van Dyke fry, literally? I don't know. Thanks for the call, Brian. I mean, and the other thing, and this tells you something about, you know, the lack of belief a lot of people have in the criminal justice system. And let's be real honest, a lot of black families in this city. You know, Mays said it when we were on Flannery Show together. We believe that Anita Alvarez overcharged Van Dyke on purpose, premeditated murder on purpose, to give him a way to get off. Because I don't know how you make a premeditated murder, first-degree murder charge out of this case. I just don't see it.
Ridiculous.
I don't think it's a close call. That is a close call. The other charges, it's a different story. A manslaughter charge, that's a different story. But I mean, you know, there are people who believe that, you know, you have prosecutors conspiring with police to find, to, you know, kind of have it both ways. We charged him, we went to the mat against him, but we also overcharged him, and that this was a way that allowed him to slip off. If he is acquitted or there's a hung jury, you will hear that argument again.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the supplemental FBI report on the Kavanaugh matter is in the hands of the United States Senate. All 100 senators will have secure access to the information today. They'll get to read the report.
Will they have a PDF or will it be a hard copy?
It's only paper, no PDFs, no emails, will not be made public. Also, 10 staffers on the Senate Judiciary Committee will be afforded a copy so that they can read it to their bosses after their afternoon canasta game. Senator Methuselah and the boys and girls.
I didn't realize how old Feinstein was. I thought you were joking around that she was really 85. She's 85.
So is Grassley.
I know. Those two old people, huh?
Yeah.
They'll have their Jello and then put on the loafers and then read the FBI report.
They'll get in the pool for their, you know, swim aerobics. And then one of the staffers will read the details of the reports. Yesterday, Gloria Vanderbilt's kid had a real get.
Oh.
Man, broke this thing wide open, though. So you have to factor in this powerful interview with the report that senators are going to review today.
Yeah, he
before
wants
they vote
in.
On the
right.
Before they vote on the Kavanaugh confirmation. This is James Roche.
Very squirrely. Did you watch the interview? I mean, never.
Riveting.
Never made eye contact. Was looking down almost as if he was nervous or possibly not telling the truth. I don't know.
Kavanaugh's freshman roommate.
Oh, my gosh.
He puts all the pieces together. Look.
Do you remember your freshman roommate?
Here's one of his bombshell allegations against Brett Kavanaugh that would otherwise undermine Kavanaugh's credibility in terms of his testimony about what he and Squee and Mark Judge and the boys were doing in college.
I would say with some confidence it was at least once, maybe twice on the weekends. It may have even been during the week.
He drank once, maybe twice on the weekends in college.
Uh-oh.
And it could have been. He can't confirm it, just like Julie Swetnick can't confirm that Brett Kavanaugh participated in the alleged gang rapes. He cannot confirm it. Kavanaugh's a freshman in college. Once, maybe twice on the weekends, where he drank significantly, perhaps it could have occurred during the week.
But did he ever black out? Did he pass out?
Did you ever see him black out? He has testified that he was asked about blacking out. He said he didn't. He said maybe sometimes he went to sleep. Did you ever see him black out?
You know, I didn't socialize with Brett, but being in the same room where he slept, I saw him when he arrived at home regularly, and I saw him in the morning. And I can tell you that he would come home and he was incoherent, stumbling. He would sometimes be singing. He occasionally would wear this, I think it was an old leather football helmet, he would throw up. And then in the morning, would have a lot of trouble getting out of bed. I wasn't an angel.
Devastating.
Back then there were times when I did the exact same thing. So we commiserated on this issue. So the answer to your question is, yeah, I saw him both what I would consider blackout drunk and also dealing with the repercussions of that in the morning.
And you saw him throwing up.
God. I mean,
Oh, my God.
On more than one occasion.
I heard that and had to bring it to this morning, Joe, because that is just riveting.
Are you fascinated by the national discussion we're having of what constitutes blackout drunk? Do you believe it should be disqualifying to serve in the United States Supreme Court if when you were 18 years old, 19 years old, you drank once, maybe twice on the weekends and possibly during the week?
Possibly.
In college, 312-642-5600, turkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turkey.pro text line. We'll also take compliments for Anderson Cooper for bringing this powerful story of Brett Kavanaugh's freshman college roommate breaking his silence, Amy, coming forward to tell his story, the courage this takes.
Let's start a GoFundMe page for this guy.
James
just like we did
Roche.
For Ford, and she's got $1 million now.
Thank you so much. Now, there is one point of order.
Oh, yes.
Not
please.
That this should color James Roche coming forward to speak his truth.
Okay.
It's important that that happens. James Roche is speaking his truth. He does know Debbie Ramirez.
Oh, my gosh.
He believes her. He also believes Blase Ford. But don't let that color.
And he's a Democrat.
You know, I know Debbie.
Debbie Ramirez.
And I know from my experience with her that at least from my perspective, there is zero chance that she is making up this story. And I heard Dr. Blasey Ford's, or I read Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony, and I heard some of it later, and I believe that she's telling the truth. But then when Brett started saying things about his drinking and his use of certain words, sexually oriented words, you know, I knew he was lying because he was my roommate. You know, we were in a room together. Our beds were 10 feet apart for a couple of months.
Right, but you didn't socialize. And you never, he goes on to say, never saw Brett Kavanaugh act aggressively towards women. Yeah. Just aggressively in demeanor, not carriage.
I know. Well, this guy was a hot mess. And then he was looking around. I mean, you could tell that this guy, Roche, was not telling the truth.
Well, I don't know if he's telling the truth or not.
But I know
that it's okay to mock James Roche because he's a self-important pseudo-intellectual D-bag from Yale. And it's always okay to mock that profile of a person. So I don't like Trump mocking Blasey Ford. No, but I tell you what, I'm going to venture out and say it is okay to mock both Anderson Cooper, Gloria Vanderbilt's kid, mockery in and of itself, and James Roche, because that
it was a moronic
13-minute interview.
Did you see him throw up? I mean, what, honestly?
Do you listen? Are you people listening to yourselves? This was Tom Cotton's point on Tucker Carlson last night, talking about pouring over yearbook entries.
It is pretty amusing to see Democratic senators pouring over a high school yearbook as if it were the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, exactly. What does this mean?
What is the triangle?
They're translating the Dead Sea Scrolls. Scott on the West Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan and Amy, thanks for taking my call. Well, let me share something with you guys. I am a recovering alcoholic. I drank very heavily when I was young, and blackout does not equate to any of those things that the guy was just telling. Most people that are in blackout are function perfectly normally, and the people around them don't even know that they're in blackout. I doubt if he ever blacked out. I drank every day heavily when I was in college, and I rarely blacked out. And vomiting does not equate to blackout.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the call, Scott. Thanks. Appreciate that. Good. Thanks for telling us about that little backstory there. Appreciate that, and I'm glad you're on the straight and narrow now.
Yeah.
It's more than I can say about Amy.
Wait. Oh, my God. We used to stop it. What would your freshman roommate say about you, Dan? Do you even remember your freshman roommate?
Sure. Yeah.
What was his name?
Guy.
You?
Guy that lived with me.
No, do you?
Hey, dude.
No, seriously, you don't remember? Oh, my, that's so mean.
I'd say the same thing everybody says about me. Fun-loving, wonderful.
Oh, my gosh. He knows my name.
Heart of gold. Giving. You know what? You know what they say about Prof? You know what his biggest flaw is?
What?
Cares too much. Too generous.
Too emotional.
You
cry way too much.
I'm very much like any politician, like Bruce Rauner, you know, hey, look, if I've been too courageous, that's on me.
Yeah.
If I've
loved too much, it's my fault.
Exactly. You know, if you're going to say selflessness is a crime, then convict me.
You don't know your freshman college roommate's name?
Here's the interesting thing that Roche did. Dude, this was funny. Anderson Cooper, you know, they're probing on Kavanaugh's drinking.
So hard.
He says, Kavanaugh says he participated in all these sports and he was very focused on athletics in addition to academics. But could someone, this is a serious question, even Roche couldn't abide this question. Could someone who drank once, maybe twice on the weekends and possibly even a weekday, could they have the capacity to participate in sports? What the?
Actually, one of the things that he testified was about was how focused on not only academics, but also sports he was, in particular basketball, doing very hard workouts. And the implication being that that is not an activity that somebody who drank to the degree which you say he drank would be able to do.
Oh, that's just nonsense. I was a varsity athlete and hung out with a lot of athletes, top athletes can play at the collegiate level. Can drink and work out. I don't think that there's anything that precludes one from the other.
I mean,
hello, I mean, are you familiar?
We've all dated professional athletes. A lot of them drink.
You've dated.
They're still at the top of their game.
Also, professional eaters. Some of us have dated. Competitive eaters.
I like my competitive eaters.
But I mean, are you familiar with the stories of world-class athletes who've had substance abuse problems? Anderson Cooper.
Have you ever heard of Tiger Woods? Have you heard of,
I don't know about substance abuse problem for Tiger Woods, but I mean, this is how silly this is. Are people listening to themselves? Oh, this is here's an important question. Could he play basketball after having had 10 beers on Saturday night at 18? Has Anderson Cooper ever engaged in a physical activity, physical sport? I mean, do these people live in a bubble? What the hell is he talking about?
Because he's not athletic and he doesn't know that you can drink and play sports.
He's not a human. These are like human being impersonators. Jay in Highland, Indiana.
Good morning, Dan and Aim. And after I saw the story that they could disqualify someone from Supreme Court because they drank a couple times a week, I am now eligible to be sentenced to death by firing squad in front of my family.
Exactly. Pass the cigarette. I'll be standing right next to you, Jay. Thanks for the call. Steve in Deerfield.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Steve. Steve in Deerfield.
On. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello, I can hardly hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody,
I'm sitting here listening to all this, and my problem with this whole thing is not what he did when he was a teenager, the fact that right now he's lying about it.
Is he lying about it?
He's lying about it right now is what I think disqualifies him from being a judge.
So
the Supreme Court.
He
should have made up to it. He should be a man.
He did man up to it. He said, I like beer. And I continue to like beer.
He didn't admit up to it.
He said it.
Excuse me, Steve, what did he do since you know? What did he do?
I don't know what he did.
Right,
I don't know what he did. Lady, I don't know.
Forget.
Sounds like he was a pretty big partier in college and high school, and so what?
Yeah.
But why didn't he just say I was?
He did.
He didn't say that.
Yes,
he
did. No, he said I like beer, and I continue to like beer.
Everybody listening to this discussion, Steve, including you, is losing IQ points. Is losing IQ points. So let's.
I know you're smarter than everyone.
I know. I know. I'm not smarter than everyone, but I'm smart enough to know this conversation is asinine. And Steve from Deerfield, along with your colleagues on the Senate in the Democrat caucus on the Senate Judiciary Committee, you should be embarrassed, as Anderson Cooper should be embarrassed, as James Roche should be embarrassed for having this asinine, absurd, Shakespearean, farcical conversation. Did he have 6 beers? Did he have 8 beers?
During the weekdays or just on the weekend?
Did you notice he was a step slow on the basketball court on Sundays after partying on Saturdays?
So stupid.
I mean, what the hell are you talking about?
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
What is this thing on?
Dan and Amy, and no discussion of the Kavanaugh matter is complete
without
hearing from the real moral authority in this space. You remember, you were with her.
Oh, Hillary?
She was at the Atlantic Ideas Conference.
For anyone who believes there's such a thing as a judicial temperament and that we want judges, particularly those on our highest court, to approach issues, approach plaintiffs and defendants with a sense of fairness, that there's a lot to be concerned about.
A lot to be concerned about
judicial,
with respect to Kavanaugh.
Yeah. And judicial fairness was the name of your college band, right?
And here's the thing. This is where the Democrats are left, right? They have to talk about temperament now because the other arguments are boomeranging on them.
Yeah.
And they know it. And not even Gloria Vanderbilt's kid and Kavanaugh's Yale freshman roommate can protect them. Wall Street Journal opined today, we're all deplorables now. Sort of flying off of what Lindsey Graham said on Hannity the other night, the Democrats have done what Lindsey Graham or any other Republican couldn't do, unite Republicans. The Journal reminds us that in 2012, New Yorker's Jeffrey Toobin, scumbag that he is, wrote Kavanaugh would have been Romney's most likely first nominee for Supreme Court. Toobin meant that as a warning. So, you know, establishment conservatives, Trump supporters, free market conservatives, everybody is united. We're all deplorables now because we all could be treated the way that Kavanaugh mm-hmm. is treated. We now, everybody has a complete understanding, with the exception of perhaps Jeff Flake, has a complete understanding of who the left is, what they intend to do, the depths to which they are willing to sink. Anybody who thought maybe the bipartisan common ground, disabused. And so the Journal, hardly revolutionaries, the Journal editorial board. Yet, but this is precisely why Democrats and the left have set out to destroy Kavanaugh, not in legal philosophy or competence, but as a human being, a spouse, a father. They need to destroy him personally with accusations, as they try with Clarence Thomas, so they can deny the open Supreme Court to a judicial conservative. And that's sort of what you hear now. Now you hear Blumenthal and Booker going back to, you know, remember, I always had problems with his jurisprudence. I always had questions about his holdings in particular cases of real importance to women and minorities and, you know, all their marginality and solidarity and marginality crap. That's where they're left. They're in trouble, and they know it. And if the Wall Street Journal report on the FBI supplemental report holds up, that there's nothing new there effectively, he's getting confirmed before the weekend's out.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. All right, we need to take a mental health break from Kavanaugh and politics and talk about our canine friends. This is a story we discussed a few weeks back when it became known. This guy who got a bacteria infection from his dog, and then what happened?
His name is Greg Manafuel. He lives in Milwaukee, guys, so this isn't far away. He started feeling sick. His family said he was mumbling words, and he went straight to the hospital, and he got an infection because of bacteria traced in his dog's saliva.
And his dog was licking him.
The dog was and that happens a lot. I mean, who doesn't get licked by their dog, really? Hayek, doesn't she ever give you kisses? He's like, come here, give me kisses.
First of all, it's he.
He, sorry.
Yeah, that's the lick. Yeah, he tries to. I resist.
Oh, okay. Well, no, they lick your legs.
I don't know where his tongue has been.
Well, no, a lot of people let their dog. I let Bunky lick Andrew and Russell's legs because if they're salty after they work out, she licks their legs.
Gross.
Well, it's not gross. It's the way it is, but. So he came home.
Stop saying lick, by the way.
Well, it was a deadly lick. Could have been a deadly lick. So this man, he's 48 years old, house painter from West Bend, Wisconsin, lost both of his legs and both of his hands and part of his nose. And when he came home from the hospital, what did he do? He welcomed his dog onto his lap. Here he is and his wife.
Oh, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
She was all over me.
She checked him out, and then actually, as he watched the Packer game, sat right next to him and just cuddled with him.
I've been around dogs my whole life, so I still like dogs.
Just he'll just never learn, will he?
312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro answer line. You gonna let your dog lick you ever again?
The dog, you know, when they were cuddling during the past game, turned to him and said, hey, sorry about that.
It could have been worse, Dan. Are you ready? It could have been a lot worse.
Oh, it means everything to still have my mind and my organs, you know. Some people lose their organs or, you know, stuff like that. And
lose their organs.
Just means everything to still be, you know, like, almost 100%, you know, except for the limbs I lost.
Yeah. He needs the limbs are a rounding error. I mean, if you lose your organs, sure, then you're in trouble. There's no question about that. He's not a medical professional.
No, he's not.
And he's not a painter anymore either, I don't think.
No, he can't paint. And also, too, he lost part of his nose. Doctors are holding, you know.
There goes the nose.
Here's his doctor.
Star of the show is Greg. I mean, he has had nothing but the most positive attitude of any patient I have ever met. And he has approached this with a fight that I don't think I've ever seen in any patient. And I think that's the main reason that he is alive and with us today and why he has done so well.
I want to get back to the dog.
No, they said because his wife thought he was going to die. His son did. And he said the whole time he kept saying, you know what? I'm not going to die. I'm going to survive. I'm going to get through this. And he's not mad at his dog. He said that it's not the dog's fault.
Well,
dogs
not.
Come up to love you, and it's just a fluke thing that happened. They didn't put the dog down. I think I might have put the dog
really?
Down.
Really? You would put Bunky down?
She gave if me she an infection that could have cost my life, and I lost my arms and legs and part of my nose. Yeah, I might consider it.
It didn't cost his life. It's just he lost a few limbs.
He has a dream, though, because a man can dream.
Mostly, I just want to be able to walk and drive. Drive a car, you know.
Yeah.
It's my main goal. Mm-hmm. So I can get back on with life, you know, not just be stuck somewhere. I want to be able to do what I got to do, you know.
I tell you, that guy is amazingly unflappable.
He is.
He really takes this in stride.
He's very measured. He's very, you know, he knows what happened. He's understands it. Still forgiving and loving of his female dog.
It's weird. I mean,
I'd be so angry.
It's a bit frightening because, of course, how devastating this was. But so bizarre that your dog licking you, the bacteria infection that could spread that fast, that you're losing limbs and facial features
and organs. So the doctors say
don't touch his organs. That's all he's got.
Infections from dog licks are very rare, but there was a case last summer where Sharon Larson, 58 years old, of South Milwaukee, she died because her dog licked her. And there was bacteria in her dog's saliva, and she's dead. This is 2 and 2 years. So, what's going on?
There's bacteria in your dog's saliva, film at 11. It's like Kentucky Fried Movie. It's bizarre. Don't you have any of your thoughtful amputee jokes for this segment?
Don't encourage me. Because I'll get emails. But I do, I mean, well, all right. Where's the guy with no arms and no legs?
Where do you find a guy with no arms and no legs? I don't know.
Right where you left him.
Oh,
come on, Dan.
That is terrible. Oh, jeez.
Wait, I know. I'm sorry. Please don't email my boss. I'm so sorry. That's me.
Boy, you're really piling on that poor guy.
I just can't believe he had his dog in his lap and his dog's face is right next to him when his nose is gone and his limbs are gone because of kissing, licking, licky lick.
That's all he's got left is the dog.
Well,
right?
Well, right, because he can't paint. And, I mean, he's getting prosthetic legs so that he could possibly learn how to drive, but you need hands. You know what? I'm going to sit this one.
Sure. It's true. Boy, those driverless cars can't come online fast enough for this guy. You know? I mean, not to make light of it.
Well, you know what we should learn from this is be careful with your dogs, first of all. And then also, this guy's amazing resilience and strength should be admired.
No question.
And he didn't put down his dog. I want to put down my dog.
Maybe he's trying to catch a bacteria. He's going to lick his dog and it's going to be... Vengeance is his.
And I can't find the dog's name. I've looked everywhere. I think they're protecting the dog's identity. Honestly.
What do you call a dog who turns his owner into a multiple amputee? I assume you know.
5600. Bob. Oh, no.
What?
No. What do you call a
wrong
dog?
Wrong punchline.
Yeah.
Alex in West Dundee.
Am I missing something? Did the dog have to get shots or something that they missed? I never heard of this before.
No.
The dog had the rabies. I mean, he went to the vet.
He didn't have rabies.
No, he did not. I said he did not have rabies, yeah. And he went to the vet for his yearly checkup.
And it didn't just, like, eat a dead deer or something weird like that?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah. I don't know how this happened. It's
where do you pick up that bacteria? Right. That's the question. Thanks for the call. It's, you know, where do you pick up that bacteria?
So I hope not along the lakefront for your sake.
Dog away from. There's none of that around Navy Pier.
Yeah.
All right.
Scary. I'm all nervous.
Now you've done it. You're like a magnet for the callous. Jerry and Palatine.
Hey, question. What do you call a guy with no arms or no legs in front of your front door?
Matt.
Matt. Same guy in the water?
Bob.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
Okay.
All right. You got to come on. Come on.
Dig a little deeper.
Yeah.
Come on.
You can't go with the old standards. Not in this case. You need a new joke for this.
No arms and no legs on the wall.
Art. Come on.
You said it.
I'm ashamed that I know the punchlines.
Wait, you should see this guy with this. I mean, have you seen the video of this guy? The guy has no nose, and he's snuggling next to the dog who let him have no nose. He can't pet the dog. This is so sad. I'm very sad.
Maybe it's a great story about a boy and his dog. You know, love conquers all.
Oh.
What about the wife?
She's fine with it. She said, you know, he still loves his dog, and she's supporting that the dog is still there. I would have to have the dog go to a farm in Wisconsin, if you know what I mean.
Candace in DuPage.
Oh, you guys are cracking me up this morning. Okay, my neighbor across the street got a puppy, and I took it up to Wisconsin, and I guess there's this bacteria up there, this really bad fungus. If somebody's from Wisconsin, call. I don't know the name of it.
Wisconsin
but anyway,
fungus.
You know how dogs run really fast, and then they stop, and they like slice open their pad or something? Well, anyway, the fungus got inside the dog's paw.
Ew.
And spread up to its eye. And now the dog is dying. It's some kind of stealth fungus that dogs get up there. Hmm. And I wonder if it's something like that. Like, if, you know, the guy, you know, the dog licked the, you know, it's like some kind of crazy fungi or something. Spread. Hmm. I don't know.
All right. Thanks for the call, Candace. We'll investigate that Wisconsin
fungus.
All
right. So he said he got a cut on his finger while playing with his dog. And it was just like a little bit of a cuticle that stood up. And they think that that's how the infection after his dog licked him got into his body.
It's like an episode of Black Mirror. Ugh. Trying to find the Wisconsin fungus, perhaps.
But all it took for that infection to cause him to lose his legs and his hands and part of his nose.
But he's got his organs. So, you know, he'll dust himself off and, you know, move along sorts. Bruce in Bloomingdale.
Hey, I'm reminded of the Monty Python skit where John Cleese had his limbs cut off.
Merely a flesh wound.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look, just a flesh wound.
And Amy, he's still going to be able to paint, he just won't be able to get the high spots.
Oh,
my God.
Excellent commerce. Yeah, he'll take the railings.
They say people that have, you know, weakened immune systems are at risk. But if you have any open sores, don't let your dog lick it. That's
if you have open sores, you have other issues too. It's not
just
about.
But this was just a cuticle that was. I mean, sometimes people pull back their cuticles and there's a little blood. It got in through that.
Hmm.
Ugh.
Bill in LaSalle County.
Maybe the dog happened to be a Chicago Bears fan and he's trying to get rid of a Packers fan.
It could be.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks for the call, Bill.
Okay.
Could be.
They say to wash your hands. You're at greater risk if you have excessive alcohol use, if you don't have a spleen, or if you have. Well, these are the things you need to worry about.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a GoFundMe page has been set up for him.
Hang on to that spleen. Protect against the dog bacteria. Excessive alcohol use. Oh boy.
Dad, better
send that to Brett Kavanaugh.
I hope he doesn't have a dog.
I mean, he's had a bad enough couple of weeks. Last thing he needs is the Wisconsin fungus entering his system through his cuticle. Mike on the north side.
Good morning. I think that fungus was caused by that cheesehead sewer water.
Yeah.
That they had mentioned years ago.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, if Amy is carte blanche to make fun of the handicapped, are we going to have a segment every day? We could call in with either Dumb Blonde or Linkin Park Trixie jokes.
Sure, of course.
Sure. That's, I don't mind Dumb Blonde jokes. Yeah. I'm fine with
that. You got any, Mike, you got a Linkin Park Trixie joke you want to share?
Sure. What's the difference between a Linkin Park Trixie and a first wife?
What?
With the first wife, the orgasms are real and the jewelry is fake.
Where does he come up with
Thank
this?
You, Mike.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Obviously, we've talked much of the last 2 weeks about sexual harassment, sexual abuse. And we mentioned this case before the Cubs were knocked out of the playoffs.
Too soon, Dan.
Quite quickly.
Yes.
We talked a little bit about Addison Russell's slugging percentage off the field.
Hey. Well, MLB came down with the decision. They are going to suspend him for 40 games without pay for violating MLB's joint domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse policy. The suspension is retroactive to September 21st, and Russell has agreed not to appeal the suspension. So he's not kicked out of baseball, which many people thought that this would end his career. And the punishment...
Well, in May, he's not kicked out of baseball, but it could de facto end his career because who wants to pick him up?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
But the league didn't kick him out, which some people thought would happen. Two sides to every story. His wife, Melissa Russell... remember, she wrote on her blog that she was physically abused during their short marriage. Well, she's come forward to explain.
I remember when he got a home run, like the when he his like streak when he finally like broke it. I was bawling, like literally in the stands. I was like, oh, thank God! Like I was just like, oh my God, thank God! Like finally. So he's like, I don't have to like expect him to be grumpy when he comes. You know, when we go back to the hotel. And everyone thought I was crying because I was happy, but I was crying because I was just relieved that I didn't have to, like, be around. So, like, I didn't have to deal with his, him being, like, in a bad mood.
Okay.
Okay. It's mostly emotional at this point.
We took a picture with the trophy on the bus. And everybody was posting pictures. Like, other wives were posting pictures before their husband posted pictures. But he... I was going to post a picture of the trophy, and he got mad at me because I was going to post our picture before he did.
Are you convinced right now that this woman...
Can we get to the assertion of physical abuse? I mean, that's interesting, I guess, but I'm not seeing the 40 game. I'm not hearing the 40 game suspension yet, and I know what she posts on Facebook, so I'd like details on that.
So I actually tried to break it off numerous times, and I'm like, I don't think I can do this. Like, I think like that I'm like overthinking things. I'm getting in my own head, and then it's going to start us from not being happy. And then he would just reassure me, Melissa, like, no, like, it's not like that. Like, I love you and you're the one I want. I promise. Like, we're going to be fine. Like, we're going to get through this.
So to me, I know. Where is the there? She said there was money issues.
There was times when I needed more money, and he wouldn't put anything in there. And I would literally have, like, no money in my account. So, there was a couple times where I had to ask my mom to transfer me, like, some stuff, like, just until he was, like, over his little, I don't know, power trip.
So, it sounded more, I mean, these kids are young, okay? And they had a tumultuous marriage.
The physical stuff wasn't like every day or every month. It was just like when the fan fights just started getting worse. He broke my phone in half with his hands.
But she never talked about him pushing her to the ground or having alleged Keith Olsen where he dragged her off the bed. It was more emotional.
She said previously and in her divorce filing that he hit her. And there was accusations of physical violence. How do you do an interview with her and you don't address the allegations of physical abuse?
We are all in pain.
There was times when I need more money and he... Oh,
sorry.
I've come a really long way and I just know that there's purpose to our pain. And I know that even though I went through something that was awful, that you can turn a bad situation and use it for something good.
Worth a 40-game suspension?
Well, this is just... So...
So anyone,
Addison Russell has denied the charge.
Yes.
Any allegation I abused my wife is false and hurtful for the well-being of my family. I have no further comment. That's what he said in June of 2017. He essentially reiterated that a couple of weeks ago when this resurfaced after she provided more detail in a Facebook post. That generated a response from Addison Russell's sister, basically taking his ex-wife to task. And if the allegation, look, I don't know what the truth is, but the allegation that was made was physical, hitting her. And so
there's no police report. She never called.
Well, and I understand that that happens in actual cases of abuse. But if she's going to talk about it and get emotional about the emotional stuff, the money stuff and him being in a bad mood, how is it she's not going to address her allegation of physical violence at his hands?
Because I think she embellished. I think she lied. And this is another example of why I am worried about you men out there. Because one person can make one accusation and ruin your whole career. Whether it be your estranged wife or your wife and you're going through a divorce or something else. It's just scary times that we live in. And yes, I want to believe victims. And yes, I know that there are victims out there. But this woman, I think like she just was in a bad marriage. They had a personality clash. That's it. He was in a bad mood when he was in a slump, and when he got over, then things were better. And, you know, just get divorced. You don't have to tear him down and bring him down.
Well, if he hit her, then he deserves a reckoning, professional and otherwise. That doesn't bother me at all. And I'm not saying he didn't. I have no idea. But, I mean, it's just a bit baffling to me how the interviewer doesn't raise this issue and have her address it. She's the one who decided to come forward and speak after their divorce. So if you want to talk about what happened, then let's talk about all the details. And the physical violence, of course, is the worst of it. It's much worse than not giving me money. Here's his sister, Addison Russell's sister.
This is the best.
Posted on Instagram. You're an evil bitch, plain and simple, toying with not only others' lives, but also your own son's future. Sweetheart, you're irrelevant.
Zing.
You're irrelevant trying to stay in the game any way you can. We see you. That's Addison Russell's sister, who's also a woman, responding to the allegations by Addison Russell's ex-wife. And I mean, look, divorce proceedings, oftentimes ugly.
Yeah.
Oftentimes allegations are made that are either untrue or unprovable. Addison Russell, you could certainly make the case, and I'm not rallying to his defense. I'm just analyzing what we have.
Right.
You could certainly make the case that he takes the 40-game suspension because it could have been worse. It could be worse. He wants to just take the hit, no pun intended, and try and get back into the big leagues and, you know, make money. Ah, boy. Steve on the Northwest side.
Yeah, I had my own experience when I was going through a divorce, and the ex-wife claimed emotional abuse on the advice of her attorney, on the advice of the therapist that we started to see together. And then it was left open-ended as if domestic abuse was involved, and a friend of the family asked me, like, kind of accusing me of domestic abuse. And I said, I've never laid a hand on my wife. I've never hit a woman at all. And she said, well, that's what an abuser would say.
I mean, you can't win.
Yeah.
Once you're accused.
Yeah. Your only choice is to admit it, whether you did it or not. Yeah. I mean, thanks for the call, Steve. I mean, it's a trick bag, and I got chastised the last time I raised this issue, but this kind of catch-all emotional abuse charge, I want specifics.
Let her post a picture on Facebook after they won the World Series.
If
that's emotional abuse, then
if emotional abuse comes with career-ending or threatening penalties, then I'm sorry, I want specifics. I think there should even be specifics in the context of a divorce, and right. Oftentimes there's not. But, yes, we had a disagreement. That's not but depending on the nature of it, that's not emotional abuse. I wanted more money. He didn't give me more money. I want more details. That's just not cutting it for me. So if saying that if you're going to make a charge that can change the trajectory of my life, I expect some details to be provided. I don't think that's unreasonable.
Do you think his breaking her phone? Oh my gosh.
Well, I mean, if that happened, that's a temper tantrum. That's not good. I can understand where that could be under the heading of emotional abuse. You know, you punch through a wall, you break a possession of hers. That can be frightening or intimidating. I understand that. That's starting to go down a road that could be disturbing. Mm-hmm. Could be. But she alleged he hit her, and then she won't talk about it. I don't know. Frank in Villa Park.
You know what? I'm really getting scared into society. And Judge Kavanaugh's hearing, I think, really emphasized what I'm going to say, is when does all this other stuff supersede due process? We just had the case down at UNC when Greg Olson's, I think, nephew was found not guilty of rape. But this poor kid was thrown off the football team. His life turned upside down. Does he have any recourse to go against the university? Why are these universities taking action when there's been no judgment against somebody? I think it's a sickening sign that the society is going downhill.
Yeah, it's one big college campus now. Thanks for the call, Frank. And that's why, by the way, Betsy DeVos and the Trump administration reversing the guilty until proven innocent Title IX culture on college campuses. And good on them for doing it, even though they're taking heat.
And then there's another story real quick out of California. Four dentists were charged with rape in Las Vegas for apparently raping a woman at the Wynn Hotel. Prosecutors dropped the charges. She made the whole thing up, and they have cell phone footage and surveillance video to show that it was completely fabricated, her story. I mean, these guys took mug shots. They lost their jobs. Unbelievable. And she was never even at the Wynn Hotel.
Duke lacrosse case?
Yeah.
Rolling Stone, fictional story about rape at UVA. Mattress Girl at Columbia. I mean, look, this is why I say I'm not just not discounting allegations, not saying that most of the time the allegations are true. But because they come with such serious consequences, every case is fact specific. You have got to provide details, things that can be corroborated, things that can clear reasonable doubt, or in a civil proceeding, preponderance of the evidence thresholds. Otherwise, you don't have the rule of law.
Well, she said, Melissa Russell said she didn't want to talk about the physical abuse. Then they shouldn't have conducted the interview.
She didn't want to. She
talked about the emotional abuse.
She wanted to allege it in the divorce proceeding. She wanted to allege it a couple of weeks ago, to reassert it a couple of weeks ago. Now she doesn't want to talk about it. I'm sorry. But if you're going to make allegations that are career enders, and by the way, I mean, right, I mean, I'm sure she got the divorce settlement provides for now, but...
But the cash ain't going to be coming in later if he's not on a baseball team. If he's not swinging the bat, honey, you're not getting the greens.
Well, and so I'm sorry, but when you make an allegation like that, given certain considerations... You have to provide details. You have to.
He shouldn't even be suspended 40 games.
Well, it's just his choice. And again, I haven't seen the report that Major League Baseball put together too. And I don't know if she provided more detail to them than she's providing in this interview. So I'll withhold judgment on that.
Well, I mean, we got to keep a critical eye on those who are using the Me Too movement for selfish motives. I mean, we have to.
Well, I think that's fair. Yeah, Cindy and Joliet. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Listen, this woman, she's got issues for sure, but he won't give me more money. So usually when I have the more money need, I get another job or I work longer hours at the job I already have. I don't get this little bratty temper tantrum routine with the I needed more money and you wouldn't. You know, she might be going through money like a wild woman, and he's like, oh, no. Because she's sitting home, you know, God knows what she's doing, but it doesn't sound like she's doing anything but being a brat.
Well, the details here, again, are important. Thanks for the call, Cindy. Will and Skokie.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I was married for 3 years, and my wife physically abused me. She'd hit me. She'd get into arguments with me. I'd lock her out of the bedroom when I was sleeping, and she'd take a knife and slide it underneath the door. You know, she actually came at me with a knife one time and got me, but it was just superficial, thank God. I lied at the ER because I just said, you know, hey, I slipped and fell. She even accused me of sexual abuse of our two-year-old daughter when the only thing I'd do was just give her a bath, you know, and the prosecutor, her attorney is like, what husband gives their daughters a bath, you know? We divorced, and it was supposedly going to be nice and, you know, simple when we divorced, but all of a sudden her lawyer brings up, you know, that I was abusing her, and because she's 5'8", and I'm 6'6", and 250 pounds, of course, who'd they believe? The other thing that happened, which was interesting later, was I had a rental property, and I had a woman who didn't pay her rent, so my wife and I evicted her, my second wife and I, and she sued me for sexual harassment, and the facts of the divorce came out in that, and of course, that was enough to, you know, convict me, and I wound up having to pay like $15,000.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and it was just, you know, you got to watch it, man. You got to watch it. And I would say that the biggest thing is, men, don't marry women like that.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call. I'm sure.
Hey, Dan Prof's relationship.
Why Dan Prof is single? I'm sure, you know, and obviously, I'm sure Will didn't think he was marrying a kind of woman like that when he married her. But
why they go back to her? Because remember in 2017, we've played this movie before with these two, and he took her back, and then a year later she.
The story too. I mean, Will's story is interesting.
Yeah, poor Will.
A false allegation following you around for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. It shouldn't have been admissible in his court in his lawsuit, but it was.
Paul in Lake Forest.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good show.
Thank you.
My question to you guys pertains to both the limb loser and Addison Russell.
All right, the limb loser, again, just to reset, this is the guy up in Milwaukee who lost his parts of his legs, his hands, and his nose because of
a dirty dog lick.
Right, saliva.
Bacteria in his dog's saliva.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right,
you have a joke that ties both stories together?
The unlucky Lou and unlicky Lou. And
what are the similarities between marriage and a tornado? There's a whole lot of blowing at first, and the next thing you know, you lose your house. Have a good day.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. It's time. It's time for a vote. Let's do it, United States Senate. We'll talk about it when freedom returns at 5.
Dan and Amy, yeah, the members of the Senate and 10 Senate Judiciary Committee staffers have copies of the FBI's Kavanaugh report.
Yeah, they received it 38 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
And already Senator Dick Durbin's up there on CNN. I wonder if he's leaking any information.
And the Senate Judiciary Committee staffers will read their boss is the report, but not until DiFi finishes her pudding.
And morning stretch class at the home.
All right. Yesterday, Sarah Huckabee Sanders had press availability, as is her job, in which she addressed this
exhausted.
15,000-word New York Times piece on Trump's taxes. The New York Times piece that essentially alleges that Trump committed tax fraud and has drawn the ire of Trump's legal and financial representatives to the point of suggesting that the Times piece is defamatory and they could face legal action. Sarah Sanders responding to the story.
The New York Times reported yesterday that the president had engaged in outright tax fraud throughout the 90s with suspect tax schemes and... you know, basically getting more money from his parents than he said, using thousands of documents. You rebutted the story. Can you explain what is inaccurate about that story, if there's anything that is actually inaccurate about it?
It's a totally false attack based on an old recycled news story. I'm not going to sit and go through every single line of a very boring 14,000-word story. The only thing, I will say one thing the article did get right, was that it showed that the president's father actually had a great deal of confidence in him. In fact, the president brought his father into a lot of deals, and they made a lot of money together, so much so that his father went on to say that everything he touched turned to gold. The president's lawyer addressed some of the specific claims and walked through how the allegations of fraud and tax evasion are 100% false and highly defamatory. There was no fraud or tax evasion by anyone. He went on much further, and I would encourage you to read every word of his statement, which completely undercuts the accusations made by the New York Times.
All right, and I just want our next guest, Steve Moore, who's connected to the president, you know. I just want Steve Moore to hook me up with President Trump's accountant. For more on this topic and others, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid CNN chief economist and Wall Street Journal columnist, Steve Moore. Steve, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Well, good morning, and I guess we've learned that the president of the United States is not just a misogynist and not just a racist and not just a xenophobe and a homophobe, but he is also a tax cheat,
yeah,
apparently. And by the way, do you notice, you know, when you turn on the TV now at night, and you, I don't know if you're like me, you surf the channels, and, you know, every like fifth channel, they have a Friends episode rerun that you've seen like 10 times already. We've heard this story so many times before. I mean, this is literally the fifth time the New York Times has run this story about Trump, you know, cheating on his taxes. They run it about every 4 or 5 months, and somehow it's a big news story every time they run it. Look, Donald Trump, I don't know about Donald Trump's taxes. I don't, you know, I'm not a tax accountant. I will say this: the man is a brilliant businessman. One of the things that they tried to say last night when I was on CNN was, "Oh, this proves that Donald Trump isn't a good businessman. You know, he just got all his money from his father." No, he took an empire that was maybe worth $50 to $100 million, and he turned that into an empire that is now multi-billion-dollar enterprise.
Yeah,
very easy to do. Only people in the media who've never started a business before or run a business would say something that stupid.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing that's even more disturbing to me than this story is the fact that you watch Friends reruns. That really. That's chilling.
I've seen them all so many times.
I mean, it's
but, you
weird.
Know, the other point that I think, there's a really great other kind of sideline irony here, which is, you know, CNN, Chris Cuomo showing on, look, his father only paid a very, very small amount of estate tax, you know, and I'm like, gee, imagine that, you know, billionaires not paying estate tax. I've made this point for 25 years. The really, really, really rich don't pay the estate tax. The estate tax is for suckers who don't, you know, hire, you know, millionaire estate tax planners to get around it. I mean, you think the Kennedys ever paid any estate tax?
No.
Do you think that the Rockefellers or that Jeff Bezos is ever going to pay a penny of estate tax? Of course not. You know, what a shock that billionaires don't pay the estate tax.
Yeah. But didn't President Trump maintain that his dad gave him only $1 million after he graduated from college?
Well, that's what they were replaying last night on CNN, was this claim. And now, I don't really recall him saying that. And look, I don't know about his family's finances, so I can't say what he did and what he didn't get from his parents. But I want to make another point, because they don't understand this on CNN. And you can tell I'm kind of angry, because every time I do that show, my heart starts palpitating. But there is a big difference, Dan and Amy, between tax avoidance and tax evasion.
Yes.
Tax avoidance is something you and I and every good red-blooded American does every day. You want to reduce your tax liabilities as low as you can. If liberals want to pay more taxes than that, they're welcome to do it. But I don't know about you. I try to get my taxes as close to zero as I can. Donald Trump is an expert at reducing his tax liability. That is not tax evasion. Tax evasion is when you willfully cheat and violate the laws, and there's no evidence that he's done that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And your point about the estate tax. So the tax laws encourage people to try and minimize their tax exposure, like Warren Buffett does, and as you said, everybody under the sun does. What a revelation!
Exactly.
I also like this story juxtaposed against the piece that I read that from you in Investor's Business Daily about something the New York Times has no interest in, which is fraud on the government side. $1 trillion in fraudulent accounting by the Congressional Budget Office. Explain.
Yeah, so this is kind of a good story. Thank you. I'm, by the way, I'm very honored to know that you're reading my pieces.
Yes.
This is a kind of a cool story. So the congressional, in the wake of the tax cut, which is now, 9 months old, the CBO now says that the economy will be, it's shocking. You're going to be shocked. You know, hold on to your hat here. That the economy over the next 10 years is going to be $6 trillion larger over the next 10 years, $6 trillion larger than they originally anticipated, $6 trillion. Now, that is a stunning number. Why did that happen? Because there's more growth than they expected. Now, here's the point about this. Because the economy is going to be $6 trillion larger over the next 10 years, they estimate that the U.S. government will actually take in about $1 trillion extra revenue. And so the point I made in my piece is, wait a minute here. That means two-thirds of the tax cut has already been paid for by the extra growth that we have. But no, that's not the way CBO does math. They say, wait a minute, the economy is larger now by $6 trillion. And if we have the old tax rates, the government would get even more money from these people. And so therefore, the cost of the tax cut is higher. I mean, this is like static analysis on steroids.
Right. Yeah. Right. It was sort of a combination, static analysis, but dynamic analysis in terms of
exactly
what could have been. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
But I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, think about this, Dan and Amy. $6 trillion is larger than the entire annual output of Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, and Pennsylvania combined. I mean, that's a huge number. Illinois is contributing less and less to that amount every year.
Yes,
but
no,
I mean, that's an incredible thing to say.
Well,
$6 trillion all of a sudden showed up. By the way, we're going to get 4% growth for the third quarter. We're going to be right at around 4%, which is a phenomenal number. And we're also looking at, did you see the job number?
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah, ADP has it at
230.
Is that what ADP had it? Yeah.
Yep.
But speak to that number, though, too, in the wake of all-time highs in the market and what I think the Dow's up almost 50%.
Obama effect. Don't you guys understand?
Yeah,
that?
Obama
this
recovery.
Is the Obama effect.
Yeah. But the jobs numbers that's coming out tomorrow, if it hits the ADP projection.
Yeah. So I was giving you the projection is for private sector job creation. By the way, just a little. I like to give you guys an economic lesson every time we're on. Private sector job creation is good. Government sector job creation is bad. So what we want to see is more private sector jobs and less government jobs. Okay.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, I've got to ask you this question because it's part of the new protocol. Before we can,
are you going to ask him what he did in college?
Well, I'm going to ask him before we can attach him. Before we
never
can
drink, I never drank one drop.
In college?
Really?
At the University of Illinois. At the University of Illinois, we didn't drink. We don't drink at the University of Illinois.
So, Steve Moore, if I asked your contemporaries if they ever saw one Stephen Moore plotting supply and demand curves at CAMS or COs, they would say they never saw you.
Well, I'm just going to stick with my story that I never blacked out, and I never did. I never once in my whole life have I ever thrown ice at someone.
Okay.
Well, we have online, too, your college roommate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is your life. Oh. So what do you think? I mean, the Senate obviously has the 7th FBI background check on Kavanaugh. Where do you see this going?
I think it's so interesting that Democrats, 30 minutes after getting how long do they have it now? 35 minutes or something like that?
49.
They're already bitching that this isn't the full report that we wanted. Trump should be doing is, when I watched that hearing, virtually every Democrat said, all we want, just give us 1 week. All we want is an FBI investigation. Just give us 1 week. That's all we're asking. You know, Kuhn said that and Dianne Feinstein said that. They all said it. And so I thought actually smartly, you guys may think I'm going wobbly. I thought actually the Republicans did the right thing. They said, okay, you want a week. We'll give you a week to do an FBI investigation and then we'll vote. Well, of course, the week is up, and I guarantee you the next 72 hours, all you are going to hear is bitching from Democrats. This wasn't enough time. We need another 2 weeks. We need to investigate this person, that person, and so on. I mean, it never ends with these people. That's why they have to vote. And I have not seen the report, but if we can assume that this finds no corroborating evidence of what Dr. Ford has said, he will be confirmed with every Republican vote. And I wouldn't be surprised. Here's your headline. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a couple Democrats.
Yeah, well, if they're sure, they'll pile on if it's a done deal. If I was a senator,
okay.
I don't think I could cast a vote for Kavanaugh until we hear from Squee. I want to know what Squee knew. Yeah. Gotta have Squee weigh in on this. Steve Moore, CNN chief economist, Wall Street Journal columnist. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a great day, guys. Take care.
See you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer
on AM 560. The Answer.
So it's, Steve Moore's favorite show. What a dork.
It's embarrassing. Right. It's okay to be nerdy.
It's a terrible show.
Your job's a joke, you broke.
Stop.
Love life's DOA. Never got into it.
I hear it's a big weekend for you, that being one of the greats when it comes to proms. There's a retirement ceremony for your prom dress?
No, I was homecoming queen in 1987 at John Hersey High School. And on Friday, we are celebrating our school's 50th anniversary. And they've invited back all the former kings and queens to be on stage for the coronation.
The 50th anniversary of you being homecoming queen?
No, of the 50th anniversary of our high school. John Hersey High School was founded in 1969,
Oh, boy.
I was homecoming queen in 87.
You were the first class.
No. Dave Corzine was in the first class, actually.
Dave Corzine was?
Yeah, he played for the Bulls, remember?
Yeah, I'm familiar with his work.
Yeah, and so enough about me, let's hear about me. So after the coronation at 2:30 on Friday, then there's a parade, because I love a parade. There's a parade at 6:30, and they're going to throw us in pickup trucks in the decades. If you're a homecoming queen in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, 2000, you get in a different pickup truck, and you go on a parade around the field.
Yeah.
I was told to wear orange, because it's going to be an orange out. So I got to get myself a little orange jacket. And I do have a Hersey hat that I can wear, too.
Nice. Sounds like you got a nice little weekend planned. Yeah, that's great. Boy.
My friend Kathy Muno said she's going to mail me a tiara. So I'm still waiting for the tiara to come in.
All right.
Should I wear the crown and just go full throttle? Do you have a sash I could borrow? Maybe Pritzker has a sash I could borrow.
All right. Remembering when Amy Jacobson reached her potential, 1987. And the slow, steady decline towards death ever since. That's all weekend at Hersey High School.
I'll be sure to post some pictures on the Instagram.
Yeah.
Maybe Facebook, maybe Twitter. I don't know. Right. What shall I wear tomorrow?
Congratulations on the 30th anniversary of you being homecoming queen. Holy cow.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and, picking up on our last topic, we were discussing your big homecoming parade this weekend.
Friday, tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to rain on my parade. There might be a chance of rain. And
So let me just understand. It's going to be homecoming queens from Hersey.
Since 1969.
Yeah.
They're going to put us in decades. They're going to separate us and put us in the back of pickup trucks as we sashay around the field and wave to people that aren't going to wave back to us.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to.
What?
You know.
This is a big honor.
And I don't want to put negative thoughts in your head about it, but I also don't want you to be ambushed. And my concern is that when, say, the homecoming queens of the 1980s see the homecoming queens of the 2000s.
Yeah? What?
You know, maybe you can feel a little bit bad about yourselves.
That is so mean. Hey, we represent. I'll see how... Krista Thyreen looks like. And
I apologize.
Jenny Anderson. I'll check the ladies.
I apologize. Look.
Wendy Speck will be there.
Kamala Harris is made it very clear. She's got a message for people like me and you other deplorables, the President of the United States, when it comes to making fun of former homecoming queens or sexual abuser accusers.
What would you have said to President Trump about his mocking of that very memory at his campaign rally last night in Mississippi?
Stop being mean.
Yeah. Now, if you want to call a conservative judge a rapist without foundation, you want to harass people in restaurants and public places of accommodation who you disagree with, that's fine.
Yeah.
But stop being mean. This is where the Democrats are now as Kavanaugh has boomeranged on them. Gone is the assertion of sexual abuse. Gone really is even the drinking allegations surrounding his teenage and early informative years in college. It's now all about temperament and credibility. Generally credibility, temperament specifically, because he had a couple of sharp exchanges with dainty senators on the Judiciary Committee. And don't believe me, believe Senator T-Bone Booker.
So my hope is that just beyond the vicious partisan rancor that is going on, beyond the accusations, we don't lose sight of what this moral moment is about in this country. And ultimately ask ourselves the question, is this the right person to sit on the highest court in the land for a lifetime appointment when their credibility has been challenged by intimates, people that knew the candidate well as a classmate? When his temperament has been revealed in an emotional moment where he used language that frankly shocked a lot of us. And then ultimately, not whether he's innocent or guilty, this is not a trial, but ultimately, has enough questions be raised that we should not move on to another candidate? And that long list put together by the Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society, move on to another candidate.
Yeah. Let's move on. We got to get a new nominee. I found his statement, not whether he's innocent or guilty.
Right.
They don't have any corroboration for Ms. Ford's testimony. The others are even less credible. Deborah Ramirez, unwilling to come forward in any public way. Julie Swetnick, we've discussed her in some detail. Mm-hmm. So what are they left with? He had sharp exchanges with Sheldon Whitehouse or Amy Klobuchar, and some people at college said one thing and other people at the college said another thing, so his credibility is somehow in question. Could 650 law professors be wrong? For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Cortez, CNN political commentator, Trump Hispanic Advisory Council. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for having me.
So the temperature on the Hill, it seems to be McConnell and Senate Republicans pretty confident that Kavanaugh is going to be confirmed.
You know, yeah, I think so. And by the way, to your comment about could, I guess, whatever it was, 650 law professors be wrong. You know, I hearken back to William F. Buckley. One of the most brilliant things he ever said, among many brilliant things he said, was when he said that he would rather be governed by the first 200 people in the Boston phone book rather than the faculty of Harvard. I echo that statement. And there's a lot of common sense, I think, in the people of the United States and the academic and media and political intelligentsia, I think, are aghast at this nomination.
Well,
but the people, I think, see better, and that is a good thing, and that's, I think, why he's going to ultimately be confirmed.
Well, and it also speaks to fairness. I mean, so which is why the Democrats are losing this and losing this badly, and the enthusiasm gap between Democrats and Republicans for November 6th is shrinking, and it's all because of this. We're supposed to discount everybody who knows Brett Kavanaugh personally for four decades, everybody who's worked with him for extended periods of time. We're supposed to discount all those women, but we're supposed to place a lot of credibility in 650 law professors who opposed Kavanaugh's nomination at its outset before any allegations were made on ideological grounds and who know nothing of any of the accusations we're talking about. That's supposed to be given real consideration. And everybody who knows Kavanaugh rallying to defense is supposed to be dismissed out of hand. And people look at this and say, this guy's getting railroaded.
Right. You know, and listen, I think for our society, this is an important question, right? You know, how do we approach these difficult issues? And it is a difficult issue, right? And to me, it's actually relatively simple, though. The approach is accusers should always be respected. They should be, and they should be taken seriously. The accused should always be given the presumption of innocence and should be treated fairly. And I think if we do that in every case, most of the time we'll arrive at the right place, at the right conclusion. And in this case, I believe that the accuser, primarily Professor Ford, was treated incredibly respectfully. Mm-hmm. I actually disagree with the president. I didn't think that was a good move for him to directly address her at the rally. I prefer that he didn't do that. I said that on CNN. I think that was a mistake. However, the Senate, I think, treated her very respectfully, listened to her very, very carefully. But I also then asked for the same treatment to the judge, that Judge Kavanaugh be treated with fairness and be granted the presumption of innocence, which is a bedrock principle of not just our courts, but of our society, if we're to be a just society. And I think if you approach it from that standpoint, there's really no way you can say this man isn't incredibly qualified to sit on the Supreme Court.
But let's go back to President Trump when he did mock Christine Ford. To me, it's not affecting Kavanaugh so much as it would affect the midterm elections, that it would motivate some, you know, Democrats who've been sitting on their hands to get out and vote.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I mean, I think that's one of the reasons it was a poor decision by the president. And, you know, I normally defend the president, you know, the vast majority of the time. But he makes mistakes. I think that was a mistake. And I also think that it was a mistake, you know, ethically, but I also think it was a mistake politically, as you're mentioning, because number one, I think the nomination is accelerating. I think, you know, the momentum is in favor of Kavanaugh getting confirmed. So sort of don't step on that. Don't get in front of that message.
Yep.
But number two, I think Republicans and independents who are at least, you know, open-minded about the president are actually rallying to the president because they see how reprehensibly the Democrats are acting, particularly Senator Feinstein. And so I would say, once again, don't get in front of that. Don't step on that momentum. And I think, by the way, that our best message for the next month as we head into the midterms is to highlight for the American people what you saw with that Senate Judiciary Committee. If you believe it was a circus, if you believe that it was reprehensible, and I think any fair person will say it was, that was a dress rehearsal for impeachment. And if we give the Democrats the House of Representatives, they will impeach this president. And he will be on trial in front of those very same people, in front of Senators Leahy and Booker and Coons and Kamala Harris and Senator Feinstein. And if you think that's a good idea for this country, then fine, you know, sit out this election. But if you don't think that's a good idea, then you've got to step up and vote for Republicans and make sure that we keep the House so that we don't go through that national nonsense, because it will be what just happened with Kavanaugh writ large. And Trump will be on trial.
It may,
not Judge Kavanaugh.
It may be Trump and Judge Kavanaugh. You could see them move on Judge Kavanaugh to impeach him from the Supreme Court if he's confirmed, too. I mean, don't put anything past them when you're talking about the cultural Marxists, the resistance. So it's absolutely correct. And I think the fairness argument that I sort of alluded to earlier, that this guy is just being treated unfairly, decrypting yearbook scrawls and talking about how many times he drank during a weekend as a freshman at Yale, I think it strikes most people as ridiculous because, you know, they've actually lived lives and they've been teenagers and young people in college at one point too. And the idea of holding somebody's professional advancement up on that basis with nothing more strikes them, I think most people, as a little bit silly, and it should.
Right. No, 100%, Dan. And, you know, here's the thing. Let's just be honest. What's this really about with the Supreme Court? I think it's about abortion and nothing else. I really do. This is about Roe v. Wade. And the Democrats, instead of trying to persuade the people that their position is correct, right, that abortion all the way until the day of birth, which is legal in states in this country, Oregon being one of them, I think there's seven states total, instead of trying to convince the people that that's the correct policy, they want to rely on five unelected justices to enforce their view rather than persuade the people. And because of that, that's why they're going to the mat on this issue. And I they'll never admit it. They'll never be honest about it. But I really believe that at the end of the day, That is what this is about. They are so totally fearful that for decades they've been able to essentially hide behind the tyranny of the court. And it is a tyranny, by the way, when they usurp the democratic process and don't allow the people to decide. Instead, they decide and legislate from the bench and determine the most important cultural issues of our day, things like when does life begin? What constitutes a marriage? Those questions have been really robbed from the people. The idea that those questions could be returned to the people and that federalism might actually work and that Alabama will probably arrive at a very different place than Oregon on these critical issues, cultural issues, that it strikes fear in their hearts so deeply that's why they're reacting this way. And what I believe ultimately will be great for our society is returning that power to the people, respecting the Constitution, and ultimately deciding these issues in a reasonable way, in the democratic small d way that we're supposed to, that our founding fathers envisioned.
He is Steve Cortez, CNN political commentator and Trump Hispanic Advisory Council president. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and question, if a gubernatorial debate occurs but no one cares, did it actually happen?
It happened, and Cash Jackson wasn't invited, and are your friend from downstate, the state senator, he wasn't invited either.
Cash Jackson will have to pick up his crazy heart and try again.
Cash Jackson. And so the ladies began, and of course the first topic was the Legionnaires' disease, the outbreak at the VA in Quincy.
The team determined the right time. We needed to get all the facts, make sure that there was no panic or inappropriate misinformation put out. And again, what our focus was protecting our veterans, protecting our staff.
Not so, says JB.
Well, this was a cover-up all along. Remember that Governor Rauner knew about this. His administration knew about it. Days went by without notifying people. People got sick as a result of that.
No, it's actually worse than that. We covered this issue in the Ives campaign in the primary. Governor Rauner is lying. He's wrong. All you have to do is go back and look at the timeline. We did commercials on this. Everything's fine. It wasn't days. It was months and months and months, a year and a half. People still getting sick, people dying. The state did nothing. This was incompetence. It was incompetence by the Rauner administration. There's no two ways about it. I don't care about the political implications or flacking for Rauner, and I'm certainly not flacking for Pritzker because he doesn't come to the table with clean hands. But the point is, on the merits of it, an absolute catastrophe. There is no defense for how the state handled the Quincy Veterans Home problem, the Legionnaires' disease there, where 13 veterans died unnecessarily, people still getting sick, and it took the state months and months and months on end after everybody was giving the place a clean bill of health to actually act to address the situation, to remove people from that
facility,
that poisoned facility.
They should have raised it.
I mean, so on that issue, that's one of Rauner's abject failures as governor, of which there are many.
Of course, toilets came out. J.B. Pritzker is taking his toilets out and saving $341,000 in taxes.
We sought a reassessment of the property, just like 50,000 other people in Cook County
it's
do.
It's nothing like what other people do. That's false.
Governor, may I finish?
Do you believe those schemes deserve to be prosecuted? Yes or no, and why?
Governor Rauner, this was a leaked memo. A leaked memo for political purposes.
It doesn't matter. The memo doesn't matter. Now, on the other side, Spalding is lying. You appealing your property taxes is not the same thing as ripping out fixtures in your home to get it designated as uninhabitable for artificially reducing your property taxes significantly. So did J.B. Pritzker commit property tax fraud with respect to the removal of toilets from his home?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
he did.
So he's lying.
Closing arguments got a little nasty.
With all the money that gets spent in politics, that in this race, Illinois is worth it.
He is trying to buy political office. He's trying to buy the governorship to be something for the first time in his life, because if he wasn't a trust fund baby, he would be nothing.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, the trust fund baby thing is a fair shot because it's accurate. The irony, though.
Yes, let's discuss.
Of Bruce Rauner saying J.B. Pritzker is trying to buy office. I mean, you know, obviously that's what he arguably did in 2014.
Right.
And now he's run up against somebody who can come over the top with him on money, and he doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it. He's outspending him 3-1. And he doesn't like it.
The quality of that debate is why Bruce Rauner is down 22 points. Wow. He's not good. He's betrayed his base and thus destroyed any base from which he can operate. He is making pathetic, transparent, pandering appeals to people that aren't going to vote for him and have already passed judgment on him. And all of his undoing is at his own hands. So for those who want to swallow hard and vote for Bruce Rauner because he's not J.B. Pritzker, fine, whatever. But I'm not going to reward Benedict Arnolds. I'm not going to reward enemies inside the perimeter. And that's why I'm not going to vote for Bruce Rauner. And I've said that from the outset. The Republican Party had a choice. The state had a choice. You could have made a change. And the same thing in the Democrat primary, actually. You chose not to. So for all the people decrying, we have these two terrible choices for governor, and here we go again. We're going to continue to have the worst governor in the country for about six governors running. Yeah, yep, we are, because that's the choice we made. So in the immortal words of Amy Jacobson, suck it up, buttercups. Ralph and Rantoul, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. I hear that in order to lower taxes for everybody, everywhere, J.B. Pritzker is going to remove all the toilets. And in fact, on his tour, just to show you he's a man of the people and he's there to help you, he'll personally come over and plug your toilet.
Well, thanks for the call, Ralph. But I'll tell you what, going in an outhouse, I mean, it doesn't sound sexy, doesn't sound comfortable, but think of the property tax relief.
$341,000. I mean, that is big, big, big money.
How do you spell property tax relief? O-U-T-H-O-U-S-E.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity. Right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I know everyone is focused on the FBI report, the supplemental Kavanaugh report that will not be released to the public, but will be provided to, has been provided to all 100 senators, as well as 10 Senate Judiciary Committee staffers, so they can read the report to their bosses after this morning's water aerobics. And
But Trump read it early this morning. Mm-hmm. He was the first to read it.
The White House saying nothing new here, essentially. So let's move this thing along and vote. But they're missing the big story.
Which is?
That Gloria Vanderbilt's kid Anderson broke this whole thing wide open by getting the exclusive with none other than James Roche. Yes, James Roche. Of course, you know him.
The James Roche?
Yeah, Kavanaugh's freshman roommate at Yale. Who had this to say about what he observed of Brett Kavanaugh's drinking on campus during the year in which they were in common quarters. Brace yourself.
I would say with some confidence it was at least once, maybe twice on the weekends. It may have even been during the week.
Not during the week.
He may have drank even heavily. Once, maybe twice on the weekends, and the possibility of drinking during the week cannot be dismissed. Stunning revelation. Also, a stunning revelation to Vanderbilt's kid.
Who clearly is not athletically inclined when you hear this question.
Yeah, even James Roche in this, this kind of breathless interview where you're asking stupid questions, but with sort of very authoritative, probative way. So it sounds like this is important.
Cutting edge, yes. This is an exclusive.
Can we impugn Kavanaugh's credibility on the basis that he said he was focused on his athletic pursuits as well as academics? Because how could he play a game of pickup basketball if he drank on Saturday night.
Oh, actually, one of the things that he testified to us about was how focused on not only academics, but also sports he was, in particular basketball, doing very hard workouts, and the implication being that that is not an activity that somebody who drank to the degree which you say he drank would be able to do.
Oh, that's just nonsense. I was a varsity athlete and hung out with a lot of athletes, you know, top athletes, athletes who can play at the collegiate level, can drink and work out.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's anything that precludes one from the other.
Anderson Cooper, let me introduce you to the life story of Mickey Mantle. I mean,
Babe Ruth.
These conversations we're having and are being had on the cable news talkies are so absurd. I think Tom Cotton captured it nicely on Tucker yesterday.
It is pretty amusing to see Democratic senators poring over a high school yearbook as if it were the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah, that's about right. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Sean Davis, who is the co-founder of The Federalist, thefederalist.com. His most recent piece on the topic at hand, Republicans have a simple choice. Vote to confirm Kavanaugh or get slaughtered in November. Well, it looks like that vote is forthcoming very soon. Sean, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So what is your sense of where things are at now that the characterizations of this new report are in the public sphere and McConnell still pushing for a vote before the week is out?
Well, I think we're actually where we were last week. Despite a multi-week smear campaign and a character assassination campaign from the left, there is zero evidence, none, zero eyewitnesses, zero forensic evidence, zero corroborating evidence that Kavanaugh did anything remotely similar to what he was charged with. So we have no evidence. All we have are cockamamie allegations and smears from people on the left. So the question we're left with now is, will Jeff Flake and Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins vote based on their feelings, or are they going to vote based on the facts and the evidence? Because the facts and the evidence are clear that Kavanaugh didn't do these things. He has a great judicial record. He should be confirmed as the next Supreme Court justice.
Well, they're arguing now that he doesn't have the judicial temperament because he fought back during that second confirmation hearing.
Yeah, that's I almost had to applaud that as one of the most Kafkaesque things I think I've ever seen in politics. Uh-huh. You sit there while we call you a rapist, and don't you dare raise your voice against us in anger. I think Brett Kavanaugh's statement last week is what saved his nomination to the Supreme Court. Everyone was down on him after Ford came up and did her baby talk and her quivering, and I don't remember this, and I don't remember that, and here's the fifth version of my story. Kavanaugh's defense of himself was so forceful and so full of righteous anger. It was a joy to see somebody finally stand up to the smears from the Democrats and the media establishment, the smear complex. That performance is what ensured his nomination, and they hate him for it.
Well, I mean, and this is the last refuge of the cultural Marxist scoundrels, isn't it? I mean, this is nothing new. Questioning his temperament is the same thing that the likes of our senior Senator Dick Durbin does routinely, where he'll compare you to Pol Pot and then demand that we, demand that we reinfuse civility into our politics and T-Bone Booker decrying the rancor, the partisan rancor that is now beset the Beltway because of Kavanaugh.
Right. I mean, it's just absurd, and it shows that projection is always the soup of the day at the Dems daily lunch. I mean, this idea that somehow people on the right are totalitarians for fighting back against unfounded smears. If you look at it, the term credibly accused, which is what we've seen tossed around so much, it's nonsense, totalitarian doublespeak. There is no such thing. Credibly accused means we've already convicted you and you need to confess. It doesn't matter if it happened, just as they did with the Stasi in East Germany. We know what you did. Now it's time for you to confess because we have accused you. That's not how things work in this country.
That's a great, the credibly accused. That's a great point. That is an Orwellian phrase. I wanted to get your take on the Wall Street Journal op-ed this morning. We're all deplorables now. And it sort of flies in formation with something Lindsey Graham said the other night on Hannity, which is the Democrats have done what I couldn't and nobody could, which is to unite the Republican Party. The Journal opines this morning, Republicans across the country can see and certainly their senators voting on Judge Kavanaugh should realize that the left hates them as much or more as than they loathe Mr. Trump. Conservatives understand that for the American left, they are all deplorables now. Do you think that is taking hold and it helps in part explain why the Kavanaugh variable is boomeranging on Democrats a little bit in key congressional races?
I could not possibly agree more with that. And just to give an anecdotal observation, I never have personally been a big fan of Lindsey Graham or Mitch McConnell, but somehow through the magic of dim smear machines and smear campaigns, I found myself applauding both of them.
Yep.
They have done the unthinkable, which is unite all the different factions of the right, which had been so fractured in the era of Trump. People who didn't like Trump, people who didn't vote for him, have been united with people on the far right who were wearing MAGA hats in early 2016. It's just been an amazing spectacle to watch how the Dems, just stepping all over themselves, have somehow managed to unite everyone on the right against them.
So if Kavanaugh is confirmed, they're saying they could take a vote as early as Saturday. Do you think that if the Democrats take over in the midterms, that there is going to be any repercussions for Kavanaugh?
Oh, there will always be repercussions. These people on the left never stop. The Inquisition never stops. Torquemada never rests. So it doesn't matter if Democrats take Congress in November or if they take it 5 or 10 years from now. To this day, they're still smearing Clarence Thomas for things he never did.
Yeah.
So no, they will never let up. They will never rest. They will never stop running inquisitions against their political enemies.
Well, although, I mean, I thought Kamala Harris, made an admirable call yesterday during the heady discussions over at the Atlantic's Ideas Conference when she told the president to stop being mean. I don't, does she mean mean like Jackson Costco, the 27-year-old Democrat congressional intern who was arrested Wednesday for doxing Republican senators? Is that the kind of mean she means, or the people accosting Ted Cruz or Sarah Sanders at restaurants? Is that the kind of mean she thinks we need to stop? I mean, it's not just how Kavanaugh's treated. It's how everybody with an R next to their name, or who's not, kind of vociferously pushing torches and pitchforks in the direction of Trump, are treated. And I just can't imagine even the Flakes and Murkowskis and Collinses of the world don't see that.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, look, in the last year, we had a U.S. senator physically attacked and assaulted, beaten in his own yard. We had a field full of Republicans nearly massacred. We were having senators hounded at their homes, hounded at their airports. We have Democrat congressional staff doxing senators. We have Maxine Waters telling people they need to get in the streets and take action. I find it laughable that anyone on the left would stand up and say, how dare you get in the way of us taking you out? It's obscene and it's absurd.
Of the 10 people that they're saying that were interviewed by the FBI for this background check, not the, a criminal probe, Mark Judge, P.J. Smith, Leland Kaiser, Deborah Ramirez, was Mr. Kavanaugh interviewed at all for this?
Well, he was interviewed for several hours by the U.S. Senate, as was Christine Blasey Ford. There have been a lot of people out there saying, how could the FBI possibly do this without talking to them? Well, the FBI is assisting the Senate in compiling information so the Senate can make a decision. The Senate already deposed Kavanaugh and Ford. So the idea that the FBI had to go out and re-interview them when both of them already said under oath they had said everything they know, I think is kind of silly. They had the facts, and what they did is they went out and they tried to find corroboration, and from everything I've heard, they found none.
He is Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist, thefederalist.com. Check out his latest piece. Republicans have a simple choice: vote to confirm or get slaughtered in November. Hopefully, Flake, Collins, and Murkowski peruse that piece. Sean Davis, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
It was a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, just thinking about the United States Senate. Of course, you wonder what their secrets are for longevity, since all over 100 years old.
Grassley's 85 years old, and Dianne Feinstein is 85?
Yeah.
They were like an old married couple up there during the second here.
Kind of sort of,
you know, completing each other's sentence. Like, oh, Charles, Mr. Grassley, stop it.
There's been some compilation of other tips for longevity. I mean, we'll wait to hear yours, Amy. 117, I'm violating the Kamala Harris rule again.
You're being mean.
117-year-old Nabi Tajima died peacefully in her sleep. She was known as the world's oldest living person for a short time before her death this past April. She credited her 117 years to eating delicious things and sleeping well.
Oh, that's nice. What did she die from? Old age?
This is once. I mean, come on. This isn't like you don't need a funeral dirge here. This is happy that you made 117 years. This is like celebrating life.
Who wants to be alive for 117 years?
I don't even want to make it to your age.
Oh, my gosh. You're so rude.
Richard Overton. Richard Overton is 112 years old. He's the oldest man in America at the moment.
Yes.
Oldest living U.S. military veteran. He has told reporters he smokes up to 18 cigars a day. His favorite foods are catfish, gravy, mac and cheese. Now, this is a guy I want to emulate. 18 cigars a day, catfish, gravy, mac and cheese. How about that?
What is it again? Sorry, I was just reading my itinerary for tomorrow.
No, I understand. At your age, the attention span.
Well, I know, but I mean, I want to be the prettiest former queen there. I got to get my hair done. But yeah, what
you
were
also
you
have to get a time machine. Oh, no, of course not.
I'm bringing in two outfits tomorrow, and you guys are going to help me decide what I'm going to go with. Conservative look or maybe something a little fun? Or am I too old for fun?
Take it easy. Yeah, I don't want to have an incident in Hersey. So, again, for those with nothing to do this weekend, there's a bunch of old ladies who are homecoming queens that are going to be on pickup trucks at Hersey High School.
It's our 50-year anniversary, and to celebrate, they're having an open house Friday. Coronation is tomorrow at 2:30. We're going to be announced. We're going to be on stage with the new king and queen, and they're going to
I love how the fact you're teasing your hair as you're talking about the itinerary.
You'll have to send me pictures of the outfits so I can do a what not to wear from Michigan, because that's where I will be tomorrow.
Okay, well, then we are
I'll live blog it, and I'll give you my input.
And then the game starts. It's against Elk Grove. It's a big game.
Oh, sure. Elk Grove Hersey.
The Grenadiers.
Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.